Serving New York State and Southern Ontario, you're listening to WDCX FM Buffalo, WDCX HD1 Buffalo, and WDCZ AM Buffalo. WDCX AM Rochester and WDCX HD1 Rochester.
Welcome to Neil Boron Live. Real talk that gets to the heart of the matter and music that inspires. NBL is the place for information, motivation, and encouragement. So drop the mask, pick up the phone, and get ready to join the conversation at 1-800-684-2848 or 883-5000. And now, here's Neil Boron live.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to a brand new week and a Monday edition of NBL. My name's Neil. That's the Zach Man, and we're glad that you're listening today and that you've decided to stick around and be a part of the conversation. We've got a lot to cover, and let me just clue you in. Part of it involves hearing from best-selling author Dr. Erwin Lutzer, who for a number of years was the pastor of the Moody Church in Chicago, Illinois. He's been my guest on several occasions. I remember speaking to him about his book, 1 Minute After You Die. Some of you read that. Some of you are familiar with it. He's got a new one called We Will Not Be Silenced. It's about responding courageously to our culture's assault on Christianity. And you know that the assault is coming. If it hasn't hit yet, it will soon. But we will not be silenced, says Dr. Erwin Lutzer. What does that look like? What kind of a world are we going to live in, and what kind of attacks should we expect? Because they're already beginning to happen. If they haven't happened to us yet, they certainly will in the near future. So be aware of that, and I hope that you'll be a part of that conversation with us coming up in the next couple of minutes. Also, a little bit later today, Scott Heima will join us, along with George Hoag, and another gentleman who's part of a ministry called Proven Men, which I hope you can participate in that conversation along with us, because it's important that we talk about sexual purity. And Marshall Shank of Proven Men will be joining George Hoag of Family Life Marriage Ministries and Scott Heima of Christian Service Brigade Ministries to talk about an important free, and I emphasize free, webinar that's happening tomorrow to address the issues of parenting, marriage, and sexual purity amongst men, and particularly leaders in God's kingdom. You know, people who are called to lead ministries and churches. And guys, it's time we really pay attention closely, because you just go to a place like ChristianPost.com, and every single day you see that some other information has come out about another individual in Christian ministry somewhere. And I believe the reason we don't hear more about it is because we haven't heard about it yet. You know, that this is pervasive. The enemy knows exactly where to attack to bring men down, families down, churches down, and ultimately, if he could, the kingdom of God. Well, we know he's not going to succeed on that front, but the enemy wants to do as much damage as he possibly can. And this Stay Strong webinar, brought to you by Iron Sharpens Iron Ministry and Proven Men, Family Life, and CSB, all cooperating together, it's important. And so we're going to talk about that during our second hour of conversation here on NBL. But Lord, today, as Erwin Lutzer joins us, as we look about the importance of standing strong, remaining faithful to the truth of your word, even against aggressive attacks from the enemy, Lord, I pray that we will not be silenced on what we know to be true. And at the same time, God, that we would humble ourselves and allow you to show us in our brokenness how your grace is sufficient to meet us in those places and to help us walk with integrity, and to walk as wise men, not as unwise, because the days are evil. So God, come and minister to us in today's conversation. Help us to be focused on the things you have for us to see and to hear and to know, and transform us by your presence. In Jesus' name we pray, and everybody said, amen. All right, so like I said, a lot of ground to cover. Dr. Erwin Lutzer joins us in just a few minutes. How do we respond courageously to our culture's assault on Christianity? We'll talk about it with Dr. Erwin Lutzer when NBL returns. Today's program brought to you by Nicola Brandes, the one and only Nicola Brandes. She's an amazing realtor serving the entire GTA. So Toronto area people, this is the time to list your home, to be looking for a home. Yeah, as the lockdown eases and spring begins to show its beautiful face, it's time to contact Nicola Brandes. Call her anytime at 416-879-1926. Your love defends me. Your love defends me.
I can see the wheels spinning. You may be thinking, with all of the brokenness, pain, suffering, hostility, and division in the world, and all of the ideas and possibilities floating around about how to address all of that, you want us to seek God first? Well, what would Jesus do?
Her on NBO, a song that she co-wrote with Matt Maher, Your Love Defends Me. I always picture a courtroom, and the enemy, of course, is bringing the accusation. He's the prosecutor, and he's trying to accuse us of everything under the sun, for which we would, in fact, be guilty. However, Jesus has already died and shed his blood to relieve us of sin and to make us as if we never had sinned. That's what it means to be justified. Just as if I'd never sinned is another way to think about that, which is pretty amazing because, you know, Crowder sings a song about how God gives us back stuff that we could never recover on our own, like innocence and freedom. And, you know, forgiveness is an amazing concept. We love to know that we are forgiven. But because of what Jesus did, it's so magnanimous, we're actually innocent again. How's that even possible? That's the incredible and astounding nature of God's grace. And so the enemy can bring all the accusations he wants into the courtroom. The answer is it's the love of Jesus that is our defense. And guess what? We're proclaimed innocent. We are free. Charges dropped. You may go, sir. I mean, think about that. That is awesome. Well, what isn't awesome is my Microsoft Office 365 that I've been trying to figure out for the last couple of weeks since we switched over to this system. We've had bits and pieces of, you know, Microsoft here, there, and everywhere. But now we got a whole new email system, whole new calendar system. So Zach Mann and I are trying to navigate this. And, of course, being a millennial, he's rocking it. He's doing pretty well with it. But I was typing a document over the weekend, and I was working on stuff for this week's program, and I had a little extra time on my hands. And you know how, like, when somebody enters into a document and they do something, it flags it, like it says, oh, somebody was here, we're making changes. Well, it put my name in there, a little red flag with my name, Neil Boron. Well, I know who I am, and I didn't need to know that I was the one who fixed the document because I am the one working on the document. So I spent about the next 3 hours watching YouTube videos trying to figure out how to get rid of the red flag. Like, who needs that, really? Anyhow, we're surviving, and I'm currently looking at my Microsoft Office 365 calendar here as to what's coming up this week. And by the way, you know Scott Heima and George Hogue and some others are going to be with us a little bit later on talking about a conference happening tomorrow. It's an online conference on sexual purity and very vital for this time in our lives. And so we're going to have an opportunity to talk about that later here on MBL. In fact, coming up just after 3 o'clock. Tomorrow, I've got a question for you. What's the biggest problem in the church today? And is it, you know, is it broad stuff? Is it, you know, racism, hatred, gossip? Is it all that kind of stuff? Or is it our unwillingness to yield to Christ as individuals? Like, does it come down to us or is it really just all collective? And so I've got way more to say about that, but I want you to really think about that between now and tomorrow because we're going to be having an interesting conversation about that. Tom McLaughlin joins us Wednesday. He's the executive director of the Niagara Gospel Rescue Mission. And you might know his name because he was the director of the Buffalo City Mission for many years. He was also in Syracuse doing mission work there. Now heading up the Niagara Gospel Rescue Mission, we're going to get a chance to catch up with Tom on Wednesday's Spotlight Conversation. Thursday, another open call topic, and this one's going to be fascinating to hear from you on. Is the world a better place today than when you were a kid? I mean, there's all kinds of technological advances, But in your estimation, it's just an opinion question. Is the world a better place today than when you were a kid? Why or why not? And then Fun Friday, we're going to take a look at the issue of sleeping in public. Did you know this? I didn't even know that February 28th, there's officially a day called National Public Sleeping Day. So we're going to talk about times you didn't intend to fall asleep in public, but did, like maybe during your own wedding or, you know, while the pastor was preaching or whatever. We'll get a chance to have some fun talking about that on Friday's edition of NBL. Dr. Erwin Lutzer has been our guest on a number of occasions. He's going to join us here in just a minute. He's a best-selling author, and I remember interviewing him many years ago about a monster book that he wrote called 1 Minute After You Die. He also wrote Hitler's Cross. We talked to him about that, and he's back with us today to talk about a brand-new book called We Will Not Be Silenced. And it has to do with, you know, whether or not Christians are submitting to culture or standing our ground. And what about the future? Because there's going to be all kinds of attacks on the church and on truth and on what we believe. Will we stand our ground or retreat? We Will Not Be Silenced with Dr. Erwin Lutzer coming up next on NBL. He's standing by, and he'll chat with us in just a moment. I hope you can stick around. In this, you know, very divided political age, people are ideologically divided, spiritually divided, emotionally divided. How do we stand our ground for Christ in love and accomplish his plan and purpose at the same time? We'll get to it with Dr. Erwin Lutzer after this from Rogers Motors. That a man just can't
ignore, and this world. Jesus first, issues second. You're listening to NBL on WDCX. I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't buy my silence. You can't steal my voice. You can't keep me quiet. I will break the noise. Try to beat me down.
Warren Barfield on NBL. Zach Mann strategically placing that before. Conversation about a book with Dr. Erwin Lutzer called We Will Not Be Silenced. He joins us here on NBL. And welcome back, Dr. Lutzer. It's been a while since we've had you, but so glad to have you back. How are you?
Well, I'm doing very well, thank you, and thanks for having me back. And God bless you and your audience.
I'm scared to ask what year the book came out called 1 Minute After You Die. You remember?
I would say that was actually in the 90s. And by the way, the Lord has mightily used that book. It sold about 750,000 copies. But the real good thing is the number of people who have come to saving faith as a result of it. So it's still in print, 1 Minute After You Die.
Yeah, like what happens that minute you step across the threshold from this life into the next? What's that look like? It's a fascinating book. You can still find it, of course, from Dr. Erwin Lutzer. Here's a new one called We Will Not Be Silenced, which, by the way, is available at Amazon, ChristianBooks.com. They've got a big sale on it right now. Anywhere that Christian books are sold, including Cornerstone Bookshop in North York. But, Dr. Lutzer, we've got people listening all over Western New York today, Buffalo, Rochester, Niagara Falls, all throughout Southern Ontario, Toronto, and beyond. And this isn't just an issue that's, you know, vital to us as Americans, but as North Americans. Our Canadian friends have wrestled with a lot of what we're going to talk about today for years before we began thinking about it. In fact, I have pastor friends in Canada who no longer do what they call civil weddings. They'll encourage a couple to go down the street and get their marriage license. That's the civil part. That's the legal part that the state requires, or, you know, that Canada requires. And then they'll do a Christian wedding in the church. But the reason they're refusing to do both aspects is because if they open the door, then they'll be forced to do weddings between same-sex couples. And, you know, this is all part of the secularist agenda that's being thrust on us in North America. So I'm wondering what it was that prompted you to write the book, because obviously this is a key concern to Christians in this day and age.
You know, Neil, first of all, let me say, you might not know this, but my roots are in Canada. I was born in Saskatchewan, Canada. Mm-hmm. But lived here in the United States now for the last 50-some years. But I wrote this book when I began to realize that the radical left in America and Canada does not believe that America can be fixed. It has to be destroyed and rebuilt on an entirely different foundation. And that foundation is one of humanism. It is also cultural Marxism, to be distinguished from classical Marxism. By the way, cultural Marxism says we can have a Marxist state and a Marxist country incrementally. We don't have to have a revolution like China and Russia. So anyway, it's built on that foundation, and on the other side of the revolution, we will finally end white supremacy, income inequality, racism will come to an end, and everyone will live happily ever after. And the problem is that getting there is destroying much of our culture. And so what this book, We Will Not Be Silenced, does is it shows what Marxism is doing to our history. Here in the United States, the vilification of the founding fathers, that all is part of it, because what they have to do is to vilify the past in order to build a new future. Applying it to history, applying it to race, I sure hope we get into that discussion today, even applying it to freedom of speech issues and why freedom of speech is being curtailed. And then I talk about the sexualization of children and other issues. So what I attempt to do is to help people understand what is going on in the culture, but each chapter always ends also with a response of the church, because this is the moment to which God has called us, and we need to step up to the plate and take the consequences.
I don't even know how to ask this next question, so I hope it comes out right. I know what's in my head and perhaps even in my heart, but does addressing this issue begin with fixing culture or starting with the church itself? Because, I mean, you're talking primarily to believers. We're looking at what God's Word has to say about these things. And, you know, I can't change what a lost person is doing. They're dead in trespasses and sins. They're living in darkness. Certainly, we can have an impact on culture in the sense of, you know, how we vote on particular issues like abortion, for instance, that kind of thing. But how I respond to God myself, whether or not I'm obedient to Christ, seems to me has to be somewhat of a starting place. Your thoughts on that?
I say in the intro to the book, I did not write this book to reclaim the culture. I did it to reclaim the church. Now, in the process, we have to understand the culture, of course, but I think, quite frankly, the culture war, to some extent, has been lost. I don't ever foresee a day in Canada or the United States where we roll back same-sex marriage, abortion maybe to some extent, but that is all such a part of our culture. So the question is, how do we as a church respond to this? And one of the things I notice is that the church is actually bowing to the culture and not understanding it. You know, here in America, we have, for example, Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And this gets us into the racial issue. But do Black Lives Matter? Of course, all Black Lives Matter. But the organization that takes that mantra is Marxist. And what does it believe in, if you look at its website? The dissolution of the nuclear family. Why? Because Karl Marx believed that the family was a unit of oppression. Remember, for Marx, history is to be understood in terms of oppressor and oppressed. And the nuclear family, men oppressed their wives, parents oppressed their children, God was the ultimate oppressor. So what we had to do is to remove oppression. So what I want people to do is to understand what is happening and then say, how do we respond to this as Christians? One of the reasons I also wrote it is to help parents to understand, why is it that when their kids go off to college, they come back hating America? What is being taught there that is totally destructive? Issues regarding race, issues regarding our history, and those are the kinds of things. But always the issue is, how do we respond? How do we hold the line and say with Luther, here we stand, we cannot do otherwise?
Well, which is likely to be a costly statement at some point in the not-too-distant future. Let me ask you this. You pastored a mixed-race church for many years, so when you hear words like systemic racism, how do you react to that? Do you agree that racism is systemic, partly systemic, totally systemic? Help us understand.
Yeah, we've made a lot of progress here in the United States, but of course there is still racism, and it may be systemic. But here's where the Christian answer is the right answer. Now, in the book, I talk about critical race theory. Do you folks talk about that? I'm sure that the Canadians also.
Yeah, we've addressed it several times here. However, I think the vast majority of people, particularly in the church, really don't have much of an understanding. But this is the very thing that's now being taught to students everywhere. So go ahead and expound on it for sure.
Yeah, it's actually Marxist. What it does is it divides, according to Marx, people into two columns. You have the oppressors and you have the oppressed. And so the intention, and I show this in the book, is to keep the races in perpetual conflict, to have no resolution, no interest in reconciliation. What they want to do is to keep the races in perpetual conflict and fear of saying the wrong thing, and you know what that's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And in this way, the races will be until the oppressed overcome the oppressors and have cultural dominance. Now, Christianity looks at this and says this is entirely wrong because we don't have that great a difference between us. We are all sinners. We all come to the foot of the cross. Racism exists in all human hearts. And having been forgiven, we now ask ourselves, how do we go forward and make a difference in our communities? In other words, Christianity says we don't really have a skin problem. We have a sin problem, and it goes to the depths of it.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Moody Church. Moody Church on any Sunday before the pandemic, when the services were actually live and it was open, on any Sunday we would have 70 different countries of origin represented in our congregation. Because I used to tell the people that what we want to do is to prepare for heaven, where there will be people from every tongue and people and nation. But critical race theory, all these identity studies in the universities, are not intended to bring about any kind of reconciliation. They are deeply committed to blaming, shaming, trying to blame one race for all the problems in another, and to make sure that there is perpetual conflict. The idea is, theoretically, it's supposed to solve racism, but it uses racism to solve racism. Totally opposed to what Martin Luther King said when he said that we should judge people not by the color of their skin,
mm-hmm.
but by the content of their character. That is totally, completely opposed. Marx opposed individualism, and today we have that going strong in our universities, this opposition to individualism. Everything is the collective. And by the way, sometime in this discussion, and you can control that, I'd like to also talk about collective demonization and how that works, and
sure.
how that is Marxism being applied to our culture.
Okay, I made a note of that. Let me just go back to something you said a minute ago that went screaming past, but I hope other people caught what you said. You said that the ultimate goal of, if I understood this, of critical race theory is not cultural equality, but cultural dominance for the oppressed. So what does that look like in practical terms? What would that look like given, for instance, the civil rights movement as we understand it here in the U.S.?
Well, the way in which it would look is, you know, you have reparations that would have to be paid. You would have to have whites give up their positions of responsibility and give it to minorities. There's an African-American at Moody Church who said to me, when I asked him what he thought of all this, he said, we are growing farther and farther apart, and we are told that there would be no reconciliation until the whites meet certain requirements. But because those requirements are impossible, the conflict has to continue. So nobody knows exactly what it will look like. All that we know is white supremacy is to be blamed, and that has some very far-reaching implications. And if you don't blame it, you know, there are businessmen who have to write these bogus letters of apology for being born white, as if you had control over the color of your skin. And of course, those letters are bogus. None of them are resigning their positions and giving them to minorities. So it's all intended to foment the difference between us. You know, in my book, and we're talking about We Will Not Be Silenced, I point out that mathematics is being used as a weapon, because 2 + 2 = 4 has objectivity, and objectivity is racist. The whole intention of what's happening is to have our nation eat upon itself and implode from within, from the chaos that Marx said was necessary to bring about a revolution.
Wow. This kind of stuff is fascinating. I want you to get a copy of the book called We Will Not Be Silenced, Dr. Erwin, E-R-W-I-N, Dr. Erwin Lutzer, L-U-T-Z-E-R, is the author. Many years, pastor at the Moody Church in Chicago. He's a best-selling author. He's been our guest a number of times. By the way, if you want to join us with a question or comment, some of you may be aware of critical race theory. You may be aware of some of what's happening in our culture regarding Marxism and some of the problems associated with it and how it's creeping in so many different ways. This effort to not only bring about equality, but ultimately dominance for those who have been oppressed in the past sounds scary. And I'd love to know what those of you who are African-American or part of what has traditionally considered to be an oppressed group of people feel like, or, you know, what this sounds like to you, because ultimately your, quote, enemy, I put it in quotes, your enemy are people with white skin. Now, in the church, I wonder how you feel about that. 800-684-2848 or 883-5000 if you want to join us. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, best-selling author of a whole bunch of books, including this one, the brand new one, We Will Not Be Silenced. Dr. Erwin Lutzer, our guest on NBL. Phone lines are open, and if you want to join us, it's 800-684-2848 or 883-5000. Get a copy at Amazon, at christianbooks.com, or a Christian bookstore near you. NBL Today brought to you by Dan and Lori Henderson, the Christian Realtors at Henderson Real Estate, right here in the Buffalo area.
In the uncertain, chaotic, cancel culture age of media bias, social media censorship, Twitter bans, and content discrimination, there's us, WDCX, 65 plus years and going strong. Amazing. Radio just keeps getting better.
Thanks for tuning in to NBL. Dr. Erwin Lutzer, our guest, longtime pastor of the Moody Church in Chicago, author of this new one called We Will Not Be Silenced. It's available at Amazon and christianbooks.com. Before we get to some of these phone calls, let me just ask you, if you don't mind, about the issue of free speech. There was a time when liberals were out saying, hey, we need freedom of speech. And honestly, it was on that basis that Playboy and Penthouse and other pornography organizations began to thrive, et cetera. What's interesting today is that free speech is actually being curtailed. And it's why we see censorship coming from groups like, you know, social media groups, Twitter, Facebook, and others beginning to crack down on free speech, so-called free speech, because they're saying certain kinds of speech is dangerous. In other words, if you don't agree with us, we'll shut you down because what we know what's right, you don't know what's right. Some of this is happening to people that are Christians, that are saying Christian things. Okay, just comment on that if you don't mind, because it seems to me that that kind of thing has happened before in, you know, places like Russia, for instance, Eastern Europe. This all seems vaguely familiar if you study history. Can you comment on that aspect of what's happening in culture right now?
I'd love to, because in the book what I do is discuss cultural demonization, collective demonization, which was perfected in Russia. Here's what happened. When the Russians decided that a person was to be deleted, and, you know, a persona non grata, everyone chimed in. People who didn't even know the individual or people who had no idea what he was teaching or believing, they all wrote letters condemning him. What they wanted to say is, look, we are on board. You know, you mentioned earlier I wrote the book Hitler's Cross about mm-hmm. Hitler's Germany. In Germany, there were churches that put a swastika on their door saying, in effect, when you come for the Christians, don't come for us because we are on your side. So what happens in society is collective demonization. And Churchill, I quote him, who said that an appeaser is somebody who feeds the crocodile with a hope that the crocodile eats him last. So that's the idea. You have all of this appeasement. Now, isn't this interesting? But this also comes from Marxism. You know, there was a 1960s Marxist philosopher by the name of Herbert Marcuse, and he said, if we allow free speech, the capitalists, the oppressors, will always use free speech to oppress people. So it's time for us to not let them speak and let the oppressed speak. And that's exactly what is happening in our universities. I quote someone, a contemporary writer, who says that two standards are unapologetically called for. In other words, you have one standard for the oppressed, namely the LGBTQ community or minorities. It is their turn to speak. It is the turn of the oppressors to be quiet. And what happens when somebody in our universities today hears something that he or she doesn't like? They have to retreat into a safe place to lick the wounds of their unappreciated victimhood. And so that's where we are today. Again, Marxist, and you're right, conservatives are not allowed to speak oftentimes, and only the leftists have freedom of speech.
Which is interesting, and Kelly, hang on, we're going to come your way in just a second, but it seems like just a decade ago that the big key word was tolerance. Everybody wanted to promote tolerance, but there's an awful lot of intolerance in what you're describing.
Yes, they have so much tolerance that their tolerance excludes me. In other words, what you want to do is you want to create a cultural stream. By the way, in my book, I also have a chapter on propaganda. The purpose of propaganda is to so change people's perception of reality that they will not change their minds, even when with a mountain of counter evidence. And I discuss how that is done. And part of that has also to do with cultural streams. And these cultural streams have to be believed. And unity is seen in terms of unity in terms of accepting an ideology. And if you don't accept that, you're not part of the unity and you are excluded. So, yes, we live in an age of tolerance. But I have to say this, that most Christians are much more tolerant than the radical left, which oftentimes is viscerally intolerant.
Well, and I've seen those bumper stickers we all have that say coexist, and then there's a symbol, the Star of David, there's a cross, there's a Muslim symbol, there's a Taoist symbol or whatever else you've got there, as if everyone on the planet with differing ideas should coexist. Well, we should. And, you know, Jesus, for instance, said, love your enemies. It doesn't mean we don't live on the same planet with people who have differing opinions, but it's our desire to present to them the gospel and so forth. But I can imagine a day when that bumper sticker is going to come out without a cross on it, because there's no place for Christianity if we deem Christianity itself to be intolerant.
Neil, let me be clear. There is no place to hide. Christians are being outed in ways that we could talk about, and we're either going to have to declare ourselves on one side of this debate or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be too sensational, but what is canceled today, this is a prediction I'm making on your show today, what is canceled today is going to be criminalized tomorrow. Because, you know, the verse of Scripture in Isaiah that not only does the radical left believe that evil has to be called good? That's only part of their agenda. The other part is good has to be denounced as evil. And not until that happens is the revolution complete. So say what you will. Now, in my book, I try to stress the fact that God has led us to this moment. We should not bemoan our situation. But we in America and Canada, we in the West, are going to have to rethink the role of Christian persecution and realize that for the Apostle Paul and for others, they saw it as a strategic realignment of their witness. And that's the way in which we're going to have to view it, too, because the day is coming when we can no longer hide.
Which is why this book is so vital. It's called We Will Not Be Silenced from Dr. Erwin Lutzer. And as I mentioned before, you can get it at Amazon or at ChristianBooks.com or wherever Christian books are sold, including Cornerstone Bookshop in North York, Ontario. Our number is 800-684-2848 or 883-5000. Let me get to Kelly real quick. She's been holding. Kelly from Toronto, welcome to NBL. You had a question for Dr. Lutzer. What's up?
Yeah, good afternoon, doctor. My name is Kelly. I'm a man, not a woman. Anyway.
Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah, it's all right. I get that a lot. I have this question. Why do Americans have this division of having Americans, they say Native Americans, Hispanic Americans, African Americans, but when it comes to the Caucasians, they don't have European Americans? Why?
Well, that's a good question. How come there's no such thing as European American, or at least it's not a commonly used term?
Well, I think it was the European Americans, you know, who founded this country, and so they have been the predominant ethnic group. And so I guess the feeling was we don't have to refer to them, and when we do, if, you know, they're vilified as white supremacists, and the other groups are looked on much more favorably. And my argument is that we all have to see ourselves as sinners in need of God's grace. You know, Solzhenitsyn said something that's very important. He said that the line between good and evil does not run between races. It doesn't run between countries. It runs right through every human heart. And so rather than shouting at one another, blaming at one another, shaming one another, as is happening, we have to sit down and we have to explain the fact that we are united through our sinfulness and our fallenness, and what can we do to make things better. But under the present situation, there's really no room for us to make anything better because there's just too much blaming and shaming going around. And many Christians, by the way, Neil, are being shamed into silence, which is another reason why I wrote the book. So we just need to recognize what the situation is.
Well said. Kelly, thanks for the call. And I shouldn't have made an assumption that Kelly was a female. It's one of those names like Chris or Terry. I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, Kelly, thank you for your phone call. We'll be back with Dr. Erwin Lutzer in a moment. The number here, if you want to join us, is 800-684-2848 or 883-5000. 800-684-2848 or 883-5000.
For years, we've encouraged you to take off the mask. And now, due to COVID-19, we say, leave it on. But try to be transparent, because phony ain't welcome here.
So it may not be a comforting thought, but Dr. Lutzer said just a minute ago that what is being canceled today, meaning people are shutting other people down for, will one day be criminal. And that's an entirely different ballgame. At that point, you got people that the culture disagrees with going to jail simply because they have differing opinions. And that may be on the difference of, I might add the scientific biological difference of a man or a woman, our understanding of what the Word of God says about the issue of homosexuality, marriage and the family. Once culture decides that that they don't want us presenting a biblical worldview of any kind, then we may not just be canceled, we may be accused of criminal behavior. And I want to welcome Dr. Lutzer back to the conversation here. I started reading something earlier and then realized I was getting cut off by the commercial break. But you said in the book, secularists are not content to live and let live. They are not satisfied with pluralism and the exchange of ideas. They seek not just to be equal, but to dominate. So that's ultimately where we're headed. Your thoughts about, you know, the secularist agenda along these lines? Because as believers, I mean, if we say that God created the heavens and the earth, that he created male and female, we could go to jail for saying that kind of thing, and maybe in the not-too-distant future. Is that really what's coming, or is that just alarmist talk?
Well, you know, I hope that it is alarmist talk, but it's like someone said, there is a law of merited impossibility that goes like this. It won't happen here, but when it does, you bigots deserve it. So the simple fact is, of course, we're going in that direction. I want to comment on that. You know, in my book, I have a chapter entitled The Sexualization of Children. Mm-hmm. And I point out, Neil, that the cell phone in your teenager's hand does more to inform his or her worldview than an hour of church and an hour of Bible study. So parents need to understand we're at a war on various different levels. Back to your issue, though, of transgenderism. What this does is it creates confusion in the lives of children. You know, teenagers themselves oftentimes have identity issues, who am I really, et cetera, et cetera. And so this phenomenon, it is contrary to biology, it's contrary to anatomy, but it must move forward because it is driven by an ideology, that really is rebellion against God, where the creature takes on the role of the creator. And people don't want to submit to the creator, and so they want to be able to say that I am whatever I identify as being. Now, that is, of course, absurd. There is a teenager I know about who said that she was a fuzzy. What's a fuzzy? She said, that's a cat. In my heart, I identify that I'm really a cat. Well, you can't argue with her because the common orthodoxy says that you are whatever you identify with. You say, well, that's absurd. Of course it's absurd. But you and I have to realize that we're living in a day and age when absurdity is no longer an argument against anything. And speaking of this issue, in the book I tell a true story of a church in Missouri where a pastor preached a message on Genesis 1:27 and emphasized that there were only two genders. It was a very loving message. He reached out to those who had gender confusion in a very, very loving way. The next day, the church was vilified. Front page of the newspaper, on television, they were also. And students said, you know, at the university, we don't know if we feel safe in a town that has a church that teaches this. So that kind of thing is coming. First of all, you begin with the cultural pressures, and culture oftentimes leads in other directions and eventually becomes law. One other thing, what's coming down the pike? Well, Neil, let me ask you a question. Do you know what a thruple is?
I don't know.
All right. A thruple is a marriage of three people, where you have two women and a man or two men and a woman, whatever. And I read an article that said that there are many thruples that are now in evangelical churches. So what comes after the thruple? Well, articles are being written to justify pedophilia. So remember this, that without God in our lives, we can say no to nothing.
Right.
In other words, everything that is possible and thinkable, we will do. So parents, if you're listening out there, remember this, this is a much bigger discussion. But you have to wake up and realize the reality of what is being taught in your schools today. I can't even mention some of the things in our curriculum here in the United States, and I know that we are in the United States, but there are Canadian listeners, probably true in Canada too, about transgenderism, about racial issues, about Black Lives Matter. all of that is being channeled into our students to bring about confusion, to bring about what Karl Marx wanted to bring about, namely the kind of rebellion where oppression would finally be taken away and you could be free to be whomever you want, whenever you want, and live happily ever after. So that's where we're going.
Yeah.
And unless we wake up to it, we realize we have to stand against it. And parents, you have the responsibility before God for the education of your children. If they go to a public school, you need to keep watch over them day by day as to what they are being taught. If you object, get other parents who have the same objections and see if you can change the curriculum and so forth. But we're in a war here on many different levels.
Yeah, let me get a quick response from you on this. I don't mean to belabor it, but it came to mind when you were talking about the girl who said she identifies as a cat. Real quick, you know, regarding coronavirus, and I don't want to get into it, but everything, we hear Dr. Fauci and others saying it's all about the science. It's all about the science. Then, you know, people argue back and say, wait a minute, why does my restaurant have to close down at 10 o'clock versus 11 p.m.? Show me the science. And on that basis, some people have had these decisions overturned in the courts and whatever, because you eventually applied logic to these things. And if there's no science to back it up, okay, well, on that basis, some of these things have been overturned. Now, let's go back to the fuzzy for just a minute. There could come a day when someone says, oh, well, you're calling me a white supremacist because of this, my skin color, but I'm not a white supremacist. I identify as an oppressed African-American male. And I would suspect that the response is going to be, you're not allowed to say that because it doesn't fit the narrative. And so it's
that's right.
It's sort of a selective absurdity. The acceptance of that absurdity that the fuzzy cat girl applied isn't applicable here. Right. So it's selective. I mean, ultimately, this is insane where we're headed.
Absolutely. It's insane. And I never thought of it that way. But you're right. If you say, I identify as an African-American, even though you have a white skin, theoretically, they should take that seriously and say, okay,
right,
then you are among the oppressed. But it doesn't work that way. And getting back to what I was saying earlier about critical race theory, you have to understand that in their mind, all whites are oppressors. And you may, and a person of privilege, and you may be brought up in the poorest neighborhood with great poverty, with abuse, and so forth, you're still a person of privilege. But Michael Jordan, who's famous and who has millions of dollars, is not a person of privilege because of the color of his skin. So you can see here the absurdity to which all of this leads, but the great emphasis has to be, remember Karl Marx, and we keep going back to him, who believed that chaos was very important to bring about a revolution. So if you can get a nation to feed on itself and to destroy itself by internal wrangling, accusations, shaming, vilification, that's a tremendous step toward the socialist utopia to which we are moving.
Wow. We'll be back in a moment. We've got a few minutes left here with Dr. Erwin Lutzer. We're getting ready to wrap up our conversation. His book is called We Will Not Be Silenced. I urge you to get a copy. He's a best-selling author. He wrote One Minute After You Die. He also wrote a book that we talked about some years ago called Hitler's Cross. We Will Not Be Silenced from Dr. Erwin Lutzer. Get a copy at Amazon or at ChristianBooks.com. NBL Today brought to you by Christian dentist Dr. Paul Musa. So let's get back to it here on NBL. Dr. Erwin Lutzer, longtime pastor of the Moody Church in Chicago, which, by the way, was a very culturally diverse congregation. I think he said there was people there from 70 different nations around the world. That's incredible, on any given Sunday. Yeah, we live in perilous times, very divided times, and times in which one group of people known as the progressive elite seem to be wanting to make a whole new set of rules and regulations that everyone else must abide by or face the consequences, whether that's being canceled or ultimately facing criminal charges as a result of where all of this is heading. And Dr. Lutzer, it's weird talking about it in this sense because it does sound so hysterical. It sounds like it's alarmist, and yet we can see it happening all over the place. People are losing their jobs for making simple statements that the world used to accept as right and true.
Not only that, but what has really exacerbated the problem is the internet. And people are constantly outraged by anything that offends them. We live in an offended generation. People talk about them as eggshell plaintiffs. In other words, they're so easily offended because if they meet an idea that they don't like, as I already mentioned, they have to retreat into a safe place. So the two pressures that things come down on are, number one, the culture. We may still have freedom of religion, but people self-censure themselves out of fear. Remember this. As I mentioned, I have a chapter on the whole thing of propaganda. Propaganda is driven by two things, hate and fear. You need a group to hate. You need a group to vilify. And then what you need is everybody to get on board. And if they don't, you are going to discover that you will have to pay the consequences. Well, as things begin to sift out, conservatives are the group to hate, and if you somehow overstep a boundary, you will be vilified. In fact, one of the chapters in the book is entitled Vilify, where arguments today are no longer settled by discussion, but by vilification. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I want to end here, Anil. I know that our time here is somewhat short, and that is by emphasizing the last chapter where I talk about Jesus speaking to the church in Sardis, said, strengthen what remains. Remember at the beginning of our discussion, I pointed out that I wrote this book not so much to reclaim the culture as to reclaim the church. The church in Sardis no longer saw the world as an enemy. This is found, by the way, in the letter that Jesus wrote in Revelation chapter 3. So it no longer saw the world as an enemy, and Jesus said, you think that you're alive, but you're dead. But then Jesus goes on, and by the way, what I do here is I write what I think would be a letter that Jesus would say to the American church, where I talk about its submission to a wrong view of social justice and sexuality and all those things. But isn't it interesting that when you get near the end of the letter, Jesus said, but I still have some people in Sardis who have not soiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. Now, I heard just a moment ago that you're going to be having a session on sexual purity.
Yep.
That's incredibly important, because in an age in which everything that has been nailed down is being ripped up, and it's happening very quickly, even in the last couple of months, as all of us know, in that age, God calls us. He has not abandoned his church. He gives us the strength. He gives us what we need in order to combat the culture, to stand against it, and to take the consequences, which we aren't used to doing. It may mean losing your job. You know, I tell the story of a school teacher here in Chicago, who told me that he was told, it is not enough for you to simply tolerate same-sex marriage. You have to celebrate it. Well, that's a line in the sand for him. Can you celebrate what God has condemned? No. What might happen? You might lose your job. Are we willing as a church to step up and help somebody like that and say, when you lose your job, we're going to be here for you. We're going to help you as best we can to get through this, because unless the church has groups of people within it who are wholly committed, not just in word, but in deed, we are going to just simply let the culture run right over us.
Fascinating stuff that you're talking about here. The book is one I highly recommend you get your hands on. We Will Not Be Silenced. You can go to Amazon or christianbooks.com. I think you said, Dr. Lutzer, there's a big sale at christianbooks.com. Get a copy of it, tell your friends about it, read it, and pass it on. This is powerful stuff, because ultimately this contains information of things we need to know about, because this is ultimately where we are headed as a culture. And any final word you want to leave with us? We got about a minute left.
Yeah, remember that we are not called to success. We are called to faithfulness. And in answering the question, what does faithfulness look like, everyone listening today is going to give a different answer. To the mother at home with her children, her faithfulness may be her ministry to them. For the businessman, it's going to be to let his light shine and take the consequences. For the school teacher, it might mean to resign rather than teach error. Everyone has to ask the question, what does faithfulness look like, so that they can make it all the way safely and victoriously to the finish line.
Powerful stuff. Dr. Lutzer, come back sometime. I've really enjoyed the conversation. We'd love to get you back if we can.
All right. Thank you, and God bless.
You too. Dr. Erwin Lutzer, he wrote 1 Minute After You Die, a book that we talked about in the 1990s here on NBL. Fascinating book that deals with, you know, what happens when you step across the threshold and enter the afterlife. What's it look like? 1 Minute After You Die was the name of that one. Then he wrote Hitler's Cross, a fascinating book that deals with history, including church history. And then this more recent one, We Will Not Be Silenced, from Dr. Erwin Lutzer. Thanks to Dr. Lutzer for joining us on NBL. You know, he raises a lot of interesting questions, because I think our perspective in the church has often been, how are we going to fix the culture? And I've begun to feel more and more over the last 5 or 10 years that there is no fixing the culture. And, you know, how short-sighted to think that we could in the first place. The only thing that can fix the culture is being radically transformed by the blood of Christ and the infusion of the Holy Spirit into any equation. You know, it's about the transformation of one's heart. How is it that we love enemies? Because we get the love of God into our hearts. You know, we can't manufacture that in our own strength. So it boils down to this. It's the idea that, like, you know, Hollywood is so dark and there's so many evil things coming out of Hollywood, and we want Hollywood to change. Well, Hollywood's only going to change when Jesus gets a hold of Hollywood. In the meantime, we need to figure out what we're going to do with our own hearts, our own minds, our own lives. How are we going to stand up and proclaim truth lovingly to a lost and dying world? How do we get, you know, the sin out of our own hearts and out of our own lives so that we can adequately represent Christ to a lost and dying world? Let's let the searchlight of the Holy Spirit shine its light into our lives, our hearts, our circumstances, our situations, so that we can be adequate representations of Jesus here on this planet. And in the end, it may cost us. Because Jesus said, don't be surprised when men revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely on account of me. In that moment, he says, rejoice, because it means you're doing the right things. So we've got a lot to think about here, and we'll be talking more about these kind of things in the day ahead, including the fact that we're going to talk tomorrow about what we feel the biggest problem is in the church. And I'm going to talk more about that on tomorrow's edition of NBL, but I hope you can be with us, because it's sort of a continuation of today's conversation. NBL Today brought to you by Cornerstone Bookshop, which is where you can get a copy of We Will Not Be Silenced. Call ahead, have them save you a copy at Cornerstone.